type case. But the procedure for taking a default in traffic cases is not very clear. We tried to clarify the procedure for how you take a default in a traffic case when a party has failed to appear. And that means they haven't posted bail and written an explanation up front, and they haven't showed up for a hearing. And rather than having these cases hanging out there and basically somebody being able to avoid having a judgment in a traffic court by just not showing up, we felt the judge, if they don't show up, should be able to go ahead and enter the order. And the other change that we made in that section was, under current law, you are limited to bail amounts when you take a judgment in a traffic case if there's no hearing. We felt if the person failed to appear, the judge should be able to impose a sanction up to the full amount of the penalty allowed under law. That would encourage people to show up at the hearings or to post their bail first, thereby limiting their being subject to a higher fine. Those are the changes we made in relation to criminal judgments. I think I may be able to help you with what Ms. Avra was going to talk about. There's another case that came down in the last couple of weeks, and it's in a slip opinion. It's Oregon versus David Bonner. And it's not, it came out April 4th, and as far as I know, it's not in the advance sheets yet, but it's a case in which 8 burglary judgments were sent back to the trial court by the Supreme Court because they hadn't entered a judgment. They hadn't submitted a written document that basically met the requirements we set out in the bill for what a judgment
okay,
was.
Okay, so she would, do we have to make, in your judgment, any further amendments if we're going to take into account Sally Avera's comments, or you're using that to say
that's
Senate Bill 835 will, in fact, help that as well and clarify
Senate
that.
Senate Bill 835 will help that. I can't really speak for Sally Avera. I ran into her Saturday and asked her about it, and she said that she was testifying in favor of the bill because of the problems they'd had with the judgment in those cases. I don't know what else she might
Jack.
Have
said. We'll ask Jack to call her and check it out. Thanks, Brett.
Madam Chair. The last Section 6 you referred to, that only applies to traffic infractions. Is that correct?
That's in 153.555, which is the series within 153 that only applies to traffic infractions.
Thank you.
Yeah, come on up, Dale. And we have two more bills left. I'd like to just, even with a quorum of two, to get through. There are three people signed up on two more bills and like to get them out of the way if we could. But Dale, why don't you go ahead on.
I'll be very brief. Dale Penn, Marion County District Attorney, representing the District Attorneys Association. We're in support of Senate Bill 835 for the reasons that have been documented in Mr. Linden's written testimony. We would be asking the committee to go one step further, however, and that would be an amendment to Section 2, the first page of the bill, where it states at line 6, the judge shall assure the creation and filing of a judgment that complies with this section. We believe the language should be something along the lines that the court or the judge shall prepare a judgment. That it be clearly stated in statute that the judge is responsible for creating the judgment order. If you look at the reasoning here in the testimony, that there is lack of uniformity. There is problems in interpreting judgment orders. There is problems in courts taking responsibility for clear language and following some administrative guidelines about uniformity. That language will clear that up. And let me give you an example of that from my own county. In some cases, district attorneys are responsible for preparing judgments. And some judges simply will not participate at all in that process, other than they will state in open court, this is my judgment. Then we have the problem of someone having to listen to that, write it down and interpret it, someone else taking that interpretation of the written document and trying to create a judgment order, and the timelines and the processing that it takes to do that. We were months behind in judgment orders. We prepared this little judgment order, which I provided to you, from the process of just check the boxes as we do with traffic citations now. And we can't have that done by judicial officers. If it is required that the court is the person who's responsible, this is a court order, then I think the uniformity and the problems that were generated by McDonald and the other cases would be dealt with. The state court administrator could construct a statewide form and probably in the future construct a screen for the computer for OGIN system in the courtroom, and it could be done right there. And the defendant get a copy, the defense attorney get a copy, the district attorney get a copy. That case is done. And that's why we would ask the committee to even go a half a step farther and clearly.
And the language you're thinking about, that, well, I listened probably not carefully enough in terms of where it gets plugged in here, but I wasn't sure that it actually, your language did what I think you wanted it to do.
Section 2, line 6 on the first page of the bill, it says right now, the judge shall assure the creation and filing of a judgment. That means they may or may not take control of that. They may simply say, you as an officer of the court, you do this. And it doesn't deal with it if you say the court or the judge shall prepare a judgment. Then I and others can simply say, this is not my document. The court shall prepare it. And here are these guidelines.
So without, do you want them to prepare and issue?
No, I would strike assure the creation and filing of, and simply insert prepare.
Well, okay, we've got your language. We'll get you all to work on it, and Brad has a comment.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dale.
Again, for the record, my name is Brad Swank, and I'm from the State Court Administrator's Office. When we were drafting that bill, that is something that we took into consideration. There's a long-term philosophical argument between courts and district attorneys about whose responsibility the judgment is. In most civil cases, judgments are prepared by the parties because it's their case. And in criminal judgments, it's actually the state that is the district attorney who is prosecuting, and the philosophical argument goes that since the state is prosecuting, they may be the party responsible for preparing the judgment because they're the ones really that have to live with it as opposed to the court that's living with it. But there is a disagreement statewide about who is responsible. It's done differently in different counties based upon local legal culture and upon local resources. One of the reasons that it's done differently in different counties is because an accommodation has been made between the district attorneys and the judges because one or the other party has resources that they don't. When we're talking about criminal cases,
okay, what I'm going to do is stop this now and suggest that we have a meeting and try to figure out where we can sort this out in a better way and see if we can't come to some either alternative language or better understanding about exactly who's going to do what, and either put some time frames on it, when it gets filed, be a little more explicit about how this can work and what the options are. I don't think it's, and I knew you may have tried, but you may have not tried with someone
we tried,
cracking the whip over you.
We tried to create a bill that resolved a specific number of problems and to make it fiscally neutral for all the parties involved. We didn't try to change the fiscal about it. There were certain problems.
I'm very well familiar with the fiscal problems,
yeah.
and the arguments between.
There are certain problems that we tried to avoid because we didn't want to deal with the fiscal issues.
But it also doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to define those in terms of expectations as clearly as we can, and we will try to do that before we come back into work session.
Okay.
Thanks. Is anyone else on 835? I don't think so. Let's take 283, and we have Bill Linden back. Is it Bill Linden? Bill Linden's back on 283, and Harris Monterazzo is here from the state. From the Public Defender's Office.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Both the state public defender as well as the judicial department. These were just received. One was received yesterday from the state public defender's office. It's been through LC. The other was received today. It has not been.
Okay. Thanks. Go ahead, Bill.
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. Senate Bill 283 was pre-session filed by the Interim Judiciary Committee on our behalf, and it would essentially consolidate the administration of appellate indigent defense programs. There are a number of specific purposes. It would, number one, provide express authority for the state public defender to handle all habeas corpus and post-conviction proceedings and misdemeanor appeals, the great majority of which are now handled by the state public defender under a pilot program funded by the legislature in 87. It would also provide that the state public defender may refuse cases within its statutory authority only if it has a true only if that office has a true conflict of interest. And finally, it would require the state public defender to administer funds for the cost of consulting with trial counsel during appeal or post-conviction proceedings. The bill would lower expenditures from the state court indigent defense fund, but that lowering would be offset by an increase in expenditures in the state public defender's office. There would undoubtedly be some administrative savings that would result from placing the primary program and budget responsibility in one agency as opposed to having it split between the state public defender's office and my office. I want to provide a little more detail about the three issues I first identified. Right now, the state public defender handles all habeas corpus and post-conviction proceedings in Marion County and appeals from those cases and virtually all misdemeanor appeals. And this is under a pilot project that was established in 1987 by a budget note. We don't have any position on the pilot project itself, but the amendments that we have proposed in this bill would give the state public defender statutory authority to handle these cases, because there's considerable doubt as to whether current law does not prohibit the state public defender from handling these cases. So the first thing it would do would be to address that possible problem. The second thing is that the bill would amend a current provision of law that creates some difficulties for the State Indigent Defense Fund. Right now, there's language in ORS Chapter 151 that says the public defender is to provide services unless it is unable to serve. And the Public Defender Committee, which sets policy for the state public defender, has defined that term of unable to serve to mean they have insufficient resources to provide services in all the cases. What happens then when we're notified in a particular case that they're not going to provide services is the cost of providing those services fall by default into the Indigent Defense Fund and exacerbate the deficit problems that we've had that fund for a number of years. What we're suggesting happen in Senate Bill 283 is that able to serve language be removed and replaced by language that says you serve unless the state public defender serves unless it has an actual conflict of interest. We would know with some certainty how many conflict cases we'd then have to handle in our budget, and the state public defender would have the burden of going to get the resources that they need to handle the appellate work. As it stands right now, we're forced to take whatever cases come our way that we have no control over the faucet and go and get the funds to provide those services. The issue of payment for trial counsel consultation, it's my understanding that this is one of the issues we've discussed with the state public defender, and it's a relatively low-cost item, and I think his position is that he would not oppose this as long as funds were provided to allow him to do this. And this relates to just routine consultations that appellate counsel has to have with trial counsel in preparing the appeal. We have discussed these matters with the state public defender's office, and we have narrowed differences to somewhat of a degree. And the amendments that we've submitted indicate those areas in which we've reached agreement. The state public defender is opposed to the language change on conflict of interest as opposed to able to serve, and I think they have someone here who's going to provide testimony on that. But we have resolved in those amendments what issues we were able to resolve.
So your amendments are, deal with the one, with the amendments, as far as you can tell, that have already, that have been resolved?
That have been resolved, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And I know that the one major policy issue that is not resolved is the one over conflict of interest language that we're suggesting.
And the ability for them to be able to serve questions.
Correct. I'd be happy to try and respond to questions.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Mostly what we have to do. Senator Brennan, do you have any questions? You've got solid written testimony here. We just have to make sure that we remind other committee members to look it over and get to you before we get close to a work session, so we can. And we will have both sides back for a work session, so you have your chance to present the case to the full committee. Thank you, Bill. Harris. Can I ask you, Bill, one question? That's right, sit down here. You can just answer from the side. Is this bill a ways and means issue that they need down there, or is that? Is it just a policy question?
Well, Madam Chair,
Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. The bill would reduce our expenditures on energy defense, but they would increase the state public defender's expenditures. So it would probably be necessary to have the Ways and Means Committee recognize it and do that and agree to that change. And we think that it would take, I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but there would definitely be
interested in your timeline rather than anything else, so we can schedule an appropriate work session to get it down there if we.
Madam Chair, we just today began work session on our budget hearings, so I don't know that we're going to be out of there anytime soon.
Right. Yes, I agree.
Unfortunately.
Given what you've got. Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Harris Matarazzo, and I'm the administrator of the State Public Defender Pilot Project, which includes habeas corpus, post-conviction, misdemeanor appeal, and psychiatric security review board matters. I prepared some written testimony, and I understand that you have a time problem, so rather than read it to you, I will just briefly hit the high points.
Right.
Essentially, the amendments that I have given you, and I hope they're not too confusing, some are highlighted as our amendments, we think...
Madam Chair, the ones that are highlighted that we received from Harris are the same amendments that I've gotten through LC already, and they're under his cover letter, Public Defender Annex.
Great, thank you.
Essentially, what we seek to do is to better define what we believe our mission, the mission given to us by the legislature was, and that is we set forth habeas corpus, post-conviction, misdemeanor appeal, and psychiatric security review board matters. We would like those contained in the statute authorizing us to do this. Also, I think there's been a problem in this bill. As the state court administrator representative stated, we've had a problem in that the statutes as they now stand prohibit the state public defender from doing habeas corpus proceedings, and so we would like that matter cleared up. That's very necessary, and then the other things which we have proposed in our amendment we think would just clarify what we are authorized to do. So that's one main issue. The other issue that was also brought up was the unable to serve versus conflict of interest. I addressed it in my written testimony, but essentially we can see circumstances where we might not have a conflict of interest, yet we feel that we would be unable to serve. And I don't believe this has happened in our program to date at all, but we would like to retain that language. And again, it's in my written testimony. Also, the final real bone of contention is the state is now currently paying consultation fees to trial attorneys when they are asked to consult either in a post-conviction or an appellate matter. We would like the state to continue paying those fees and not have that job transferred to our program, since we first of all, aren't funded for it and would have to be, but also because of the administrative burden, we would not like that, of course. If the legislature saw fit to do it, we would do it. I would be willing to entertain any questions you might have.
So basically, you're not in agreement then with the sort of overall shift of administrative costs that you're wanting to talk about. When you talk about that, or are you only just narrowly speaking to the consultation fees?
Just the consultation fees is the thing that I'm concerned with in my amendments. The state public administrator, Gary Babcock, may have other differences, but in terms of our program, which I'm speaking just on behalf of our program, that's what I see.
Okay, I would suggest that you sit down with Bill Linden, both the statewide administrator and your pilot project administrator, and with Linden's office, and see where you all fall out on at least. I can appreciate the fact that the legislature needs to make the decision on the able to serve question, because you know there's a legitimate debate, I mean, difference of opinion. But I do want you to, this sort of large discussion of the pilot project in here, that's new language. You certainly, I would encourage you to make sure that is there disagreement about that with the court administrator's office, and why is it new? Why is all this new wording?
I'm a recent administrator of the project, and the amendments that I have proposed are contained in a House bill which were drawn up prior to my taking over this position. I think the state court administrator might be better able to address why it wasn't included in their amendments in their bill. I can't tell you. I'm sorry
to
say.
I'm not interested in him talking about it now. I just want you all to iron it out with Jack and let us know where and how and what you think about them all, so that we can come in with a better look and some agreements here with respect to understanding of what the full text of the amendments are, so we can get the state court administrator's office to look at your amendments and see beyond the able to serve question these other two issues which you've raised with us. And so I appreciate if you get together and get back to us.
I think previously there has been some discussion. I'm just not aware, and I know there has been.
Well, I'm just telling you, you need to be aware now.
Right, I will do that.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thanks.
Thank you.
We will appreciate a little more work on this one. And finally, Bill, we've got 284. Is it 284?
Yes.
The last one is 284.
Mr. Linden has also supplied amendments. They're dated 4/12/89.
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator, testifying in support of Senate Bill 284. This bill contains a number of issues relating to Indigent Defense Administration. Well, I hate to call anything housekeeping. Some of these issues are housekeeping.
That's good. We'll save you to the last here. We got it all.
This bill does a number of specific things, all relating to Indigent Defense. The first thing I wanted to mention, it prohibits county sheriffs from charging the state for serving process in quote-unquote civil cases on behalf of a party who has court-appointed counsel. And these cases that we're talking about are indigent defense cases, but they're really civil in nature, and they include juvenile, mental commitment, contempt, habeas corpus, and post-conviction hearings. And this would just simply make the same provisions apply in these cases as apply in regular criminal indigent defense cases, where there wouldn't be service charges assessed that the state would have to pay. Sheriffs don't now have the authority to charge for these services, and relatively few of them attempt to. We haven't been paying them, but this would make it clear that the service fee was not applicable to these other indigent defense funded cases. The second major point is that the bill would require court-appointed counsel to obtain pre-authorization for extraordinary expenses. And these are expenses that the lawyers that are appointed to represent indigents may request the court to approve for investigators, expert witnesses, psychiatric testing, things of that nature. This would make the statute consistent with case law and with our existing policies. We don't, for example, right now, we will not pay an expense that was not pre-authorized, but we don't have any statutory authority to fall back on. The third major point is that it would clarify that the payment of witness fees and expenses that are payable on behalf of an indigent defendant is subject to all the provisions of ORS 135.055, which outlines what requirements are involved in the payment of those fees. Fourth, it would provide that the appellate courts, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, must certify reasonable amounts for expenses and compensation for court-appointed counsel rather than order the payment of these expenses and compensation, which puts the appellate courts on the same statutory footing as the trial courts, where the trial courts can no longer order us to pay court-appointed counsel fees, rather they can certify that the fee requested is reasonable. And that was a change made by the 1987 legislature to help us get around the problem of occasional orders coming in excess of the compensation amount that we're able to pay. And this would simply apply that same limitation to the appellate courts in their handling of court-appointed counsel fees. The fifth major point of the bill, excuse me, would give the State Court Administrator's Office statutory authority to provide for appellate services to indigents by contract. We don't currently have that authority. We don't have any contracts covering any of the appeals work. It may well be something that, for example, if the State Public Defender were to pick up all the cases except conflicts under the provisions of Senate Bill 283, that we would want to have a contract with someone or some firm to handle the conflict cases that we'd still be responsible for. And finally, the bill makes it clear that the Supreme Court, and only the Supreme Court, is authorized to appoint counsel in death penalty appeals. Right now, it's an open question. The trial courts have authority to do this, and the Supreme Court has taken upon itself and has authority to do this. And it's best, in our opinion, the Supreme Court agrees with this, that they be the court in the position to appoint counsel at the death penalty stage of appeal. There are amendments that counsel referred to that we have just recently finished that relate to certain sections of the original bill. We are, for example, deleting an amendment that was in the original bill having to do with the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure 55 that has to do with witness fees. We've revised some of the language about pre-authorization of extraordinary expenses. We've deleted Section 4 of the bill in its entirety, because we think after reading it, it would create more problems than it was intended to solve. And we've deleted a reference to arbitration in Section 6 of the original bill, since there is no longer any arbitration statute relating to court-appointed attorney's fees. That was eliminated by the 1987 legislature, and this was simply an oversight when that change was made. There is now a fee dispute procedure in place as a result of a recent Supreme Court decision. So those are the primary changes that are embodied in Senate Bill 284, and I'd be happy to try and answer any questions the committee or council may have.
Thank you.
I don't know of any opposition to this particular
measure. At least I don't want to sign up and knowing, well, I'm surprised, but I guess they're tired of working this indigent defense, right?
They're not the only
ones. Okay, we will try. I've made some notes about the people who are absent, and I'll remind them to read the testimony and do that. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Appreciate your staying, Senator Brennan.